and welcome everyone to an all-new episode of Demimonde Paranormal. As always, I'm your host, Tori, and tonight we are going to be exploring Hebrew mythology. This includes the Dybbuk Box, the Estri, the Boxa, and the chaos monsters known as Behemoth and Leviathan, hence why this episode is entitled Leviathan and Friends. So join me, won't you, as we explore this very fascinating region of mythology. Why, hello everyone, and welcome to Demimonde Paranormal. How's everyone doing? I hope you guys are having a great week, a great month, and a great year so far, 2022. As it is already April 1st, I hope we have a fast approaching springtime, because I don't know about you guys, I'm just sick of this cold weather. I mean, where I've been living, warm weather has even been a joke or a cool prank. I mean, there are some days where it's really nice and warm, and in other days, you'll have just like a few days of frigid temperatures and disappointing days. And it's just like, oh my god, give me a break from this wintry mix, you know what I'm talking about. Or if you like this type of weather, you know, leave a comment down below. Which season is your favorite season? Summer, fall, spring, or winter? Let me know down in the comments. So, for tonight's episode, as I said before, we are going to be exploring Hebrew mythology and some of the entities that we are going to be talking about in tonight's episode includes the chaos monsters Behemoth and Leviathan. We're also going to be talking about the Dybbuk Box, the Estri, and the Broxa. So I hope you guys like tonight's episode. So I'm just going to dive right in to the information that I have gathered here. I mean, let me tell you guys, it is really fascinating. So I really enjoyed doing the research for tonight's episode. But for right now, I'm going to start us off with the chaos monsters of Hebrew mythology. And our first star of that segment is Leviathan. Now, Leviathan in the book of Isaiah is described as a sea-dwelling serpent. He is believed to symbolize the enemies, the powerful enemies of Israel. However, in the book of Job, Leviathan is a fire-breathing crocodile, some believe to symbolize or personify an aspect of creation that stretches beyond the comprehension of human minds. In the Old Testament, Leviathan appears as a multi-headed sea serpent that is killed by God, then is given to as food to the Hebrew people in the wilderness. Also in the Old Testament, the serpent appears in Psalms 74:14 and in Isaiah 21:1. The serpent appears as a symbol as Israel's enemies that would be slain by God. In the book of Job, Job 41, Leviathan is the sea monster that is the personification of God's power of creations. So, as we can gather so far, Leviathan is a primordial sea serpent in ancient Jewish mythology. Its source is also in pre-biblical Mesopotamian myth. This sea monster has been mentioned many times in quite a few books. This includes the Book of Enoch, the Book of Jonah, and the Book of Amos. In these books, however, the Leviathan is depicted as a menacing creature that is the embodiment of chaos, that threatens to eat the damned afterlife. Christian theologians have identified the Leviathan with the deadly sin of envy. Also in Christianity, the Leviathan could be used as an image for the devil, endangering God's creatures by threatening to eat them, and God's creations as it threatens to upheaval the waters of chaos. In accordance to the Psalm of Isaiah 27:1, the serpent would be slain on the last day of the earth, the last day of the world, and cast down into the abyss. And the annihilation of this monster would bring a new world of peace without any traces of evil. Now, Peter Binsfeld, who was a German bishop and theologian, classified the Leviathan as one of the seven princes of hell, correlated with the seven deadly sins. As we mentioned before, the Leviathan is associated with the deadly sin of envy. And St. Thomas Aquinas, an Italian Dominican friar and priest, and also another theologian and influential philosopher, made a similar statement to Peter Binsfeld. In short, the Leviathan is the demon of envy, as you may have gathered. The body of the serpent Leviathan is said to have held great illuminating power, especially in his eyes. Now, the serpent was said to be massive. When this demon was hungry, he would send out a heat from his mouth that was indeed so hot that it made the oceans boil. Leviathan had an odor about him that was so awful that if he were to stick his head into paradise, no living creature could endure it. It's said that the Leviathan took residence in the Mediterranean Sea, and the River Jordan fell into his mouth. In the Book of Enoch, the Leviathan was described as being female, dwelling in the watery abyss. And Leviathan's counterpart, Behemoth, as we mentioned before, was a male beast who was roaming the desert of Dunedin. Also in the Book of Enoch, it is explained that both Behemoth and Leviathan would be slain and served as a feast to the righteous on the advent of the Messiah. So I hope you guys liked that segment on Leviathan. Let me know if you have any information that you would like to add to that segment. I would be more than happy to know. Before we move on to Leviathan's counterpart, Behemoth, let me ask you one question. Have you guys ever seen a movie or a book that was completely fiction? Just came out of somebody's head, that was based off of either Leviathan or Behemoth? Let me know down in the comments. That wasn't biblical. Well, that was more fantasy than it was biblical. Let me know down in the comments if you've ever seen that done, because I've never seen that done. I don't know how you couldn't make that biblical, because it's just biblical in nature, but you let me know. Alright, on to our next part. We talk about another chaos demon. This is Behemoth. Behemoth in the Old Testament was a massive, land-dwelling, grass-eating animal with its bones that were made of bronze tubes and his limbs were like iron bars. And according to various Jewish legends, the righteous will witness a battle between Leviathan and Behemoth, and after they will feast on the flesh of both beasts. Behemoth is a mythical beast from the Book of Job, and he is the form of a primeval chaos monster created by God at the beginning of time. Like Leviathan was a crocodile, it's believed that Behemoth was a hippopotamus. Naturally, this name of Behemoth would go on to describe an entity with great size and power, metaphorically speaking. In Jewish mythology, the beast is unconquerable, who lives invisible in the desert, just east of the Garden of Eden. According to the Jewish text, the Haggadah, the behemoth's strength is at its peak during the summer solstice. It's around June 21st when Behemoth will lead out an enormous roar that will make the rest of the wild animals shake in fear, and will leave them less ferocious during the rest of the year. Weak animals will stay away from wild animals and remain in safety. According to traditions, without Behemoth's menacing roar, the animals would grow more ferocious and wild, and they would begin to brutally attack and butcher each other and humans. Christians and occult writers reimagined Behemoth as a giant demonic elephant. The demonic form of Behemoth is associated with gluttony. His domains are gluttony and the pleasures of the belly. Despite his stateliness, he is regarded as a stupid demon and heavy. It's also believed that Behemoth can disguise himself as a dog, a wolf, a fox, or an elephant perfectly. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed learning about those two chaos demons or monsters. We are going to move on to a Jewish type of vampire. Let me know if you guys have ever heard of these vampires. This vampire is called the Estri. Now, as we mentioned, Estri is from Hebrew origin. Now, the Estri was a vampire from Jewish folklore that was thought to prey on Hebrew citizens. The Estri was thought to have preferred men as their victims. Now, we do compare the Estri to the succubi. The vampire's name is thought to have originated from the French term Estri, which translates to night owl. This type of vampire, as we said before, is often compared to the succubi. They are both life-sucking creatures, and like the succubi, the Estri has the ability to appear in both human and spiritual aspects. The Estri, however, can also take form as a cat, a bird, or any other type of animal. Unlike any type of vampire that we're used to, the Estri is not repelled from the sun or religious objects. The sun has no effect on the Estri. Also, the Estri can fly when her hair is down and free-flowing. She can take flight when her hair is free, but if her hair is tied, she will be completely bound to the ground. If the Estri was injured, she could heal herself by drinking the blood of the one that injured her, or she could also heal herself by consuming bread and salt. However, killing the Estri is fairly conventional, but preventing her from rising from the dead includes packing her mouth with soil prior to burial, and burning her and decapitating her. And I hope you guys liked that segment on the Estri. Let me know if you've ever heard of that type of vampire before. And if you guys have ever heard of this creature that we're going to talk about next, leave a comment down below. Our next creature that we're going to be talking about is a Jewish take on the Mexican chupacabra. This is the Broxa. In history throughout the Middle East, tales tales of strange birds that suck the milk out of goats or the blood out of humans circulated for decades, centuries even. These monstrous birds were mentioned in the Quran. They were depicted as protecting the sacred city of Mecca from the soldiers of Yemen by dropping red bricks onto the Yemen elephants. However, more so in the Jewish folklore, these winged creatures were depicted as a bird that sucked the milk out of goats and sometimes even out of humans. And more so, also in the Middle Ages of Portugal, the Bruxa was considered to be a shape-shifting entity. When it was in a female form, it was a witch, but when the entity was in a male form, it was considered to be a demon. It's speculated that the medieval Portuguese Bruxa derived from the Jewish Bruxa. And our next topic is the Jewish Dybbuk box. Now, you guys may have heard of the Dybbuk box from a movie called The Possession that came out in 2012. You may have heard of the Dybbuk box through Zach Bagans in his Las Vegas Haunted Museum when he bought a haunted Dybbuk box and put it on display. And needless to say, bad things happened. But right now, I'm going to tell you guys what a Dybbuk is. A Dybbuk in itself is the spirit of a malicious, possessing spirit of a dislocated soul of a dead person in Jewish mythology. It supposedly leaves a host body only after fulfilling its purpose, or even after being exorcised. Now, the very word Dybbuk comes from the Hebrew word for evil, and the term appears many times in the 16th century writings. The concept of the Dybbuk has been ignored by mainstream scholars until a play was written by S. Anski, and the play was called The Dybbuk. Before this, concepts of possession were only thought to be demonic in nature, rather than ghosts. Traditionally, the Dybbuk was thought to be male spirits who possessed women in the eve of their wedding, typically in a sexual fashion, as they would enter the women through their vaginas. This could be seen in S. Anski's play. The Dybbuk box is a wine cabinet that supposedly contains a Dybbuk. Returning to the actual spirit of the Dybbuk, the person's soul can turn into a Dybbuk if they sinned greatly in life. They are then doomed to wander the earth in search of a haven in the body of a living person. Belief in these spirits were prevalent in Eastern Europe, especially in the 16th and in the 17th centuries. Isaac Loria was a mystic who laid the grounds for belief in the Dybbuk with his doctrine of transmigration of souls. He saw this as a means whereas souls could continue their tasks of self-perfection. Often individuals suffering from some type of mental illness or a great type of mental breakdown were thought to be possessed by the Dybbuk. They were then brought to a rabbi who was believed to have the great power to expel the Dybbuk through an exorcism. And now I'm going to take us back to the Dybbuk boxes in themselves. The Dybbuk boxes, there are supposedly only 10 in the world, and just FYI, Zach Bagans has 2 of these Dybbuk boxes. Each box aligns with the Tree of Life in Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism. The Dybbuk box was the inspiration for the movie The Possession, as we mentioned before. The box is also said to be one of the most haunted items in the world. The very Dybbuk box that was purchased by Zach Bagans that resides in his Las Vegas Haunted Museum. Shortly after its arrival, holes began protruding in the walls around the artifact. And ever since the box had arrived at the museum and has been on display, staff of the museum have experienced seeing black shadows. They felt mysterious illnesses from being around the box. Some have fainted, and some people have felt angry and anxious. The previous owner, before Zach, of the Dybbuk box, bought it from an estate of a dead woman who survived the Holocaust. It said that all of the evil from the 20th century is contained in these 10 Dybbuk boxes. Now this includes wars such as World War I and the Korean War as well, and so on and so forth. Previous owners of a Dybbuk box have experienced vivid nightmares, hives, strange smells, and unexplained welts, and more. And still on the topic of the Dybbuk boxes, I'm going to tell you very quickly the story of Jason Haxton, the man who bought a haunted Dybbuk box on an online auction in June of 2003. Now, this story was said to be the inspiration for the horror film The Possession that came out in 2012, as we mentioned before. Now, in June of 2003, Jason Haxton won the online auction of the haunted Dybbuk box. When he received it in the mail, he didn't expect this to come with such horrible consequences. To quote Jason, I say, the day it arrived, I put my hands on it, and it almost felt like the thing collapsed into a liquid state. I feel like a knife is coming into my gut. I'm paralyzed with pain. When I go to bed, I have terrible dreams of a hag that seems to come with the box. Now, Jason has said that he heard about the box from a colleague whose rumor had listed it for having bizarre experiences with the box, including hair loss and smelling bad odors. The original box's owner put it on eBay with the title Dybbuk Haunted Jewish Wine Cabinet Box. And according to the original listing, the person selling the piece had purchased it in September of 2001 at an Oregon estate sale of a Holocaust survivor who had passed away at 103 years old. The listing also stated that the woman got the wine cabinet while living in Spain, and it was among the few things she had bought when she had immigrated to America after the war. Now, the woman's granddaughter in the listing noted she told Jason that growing up she recalled that it was always shut and it was always set in a place that was out of reach, and her grandmother said that it should never ever be opened. Now, Jason Haxton had paid $280 for the box, which instead of wine, he found a goblet, two locks of hair tied with string, pennies from the 1920s, a dried rosebud, a cast iron candlestick holder, and a granite statue engraved with gilded Hebrew letters. Now, Jason stated that he didn't believe the stories associated with the box, but he himself was too science-based. And that's when he began to experience what he called a tidal wave of bad luck. All I knew is that when I got this thing, I got very, very ill. I don't know what happened. I still don't know. Jason noted that his problems vanished when he followed a rabbi's advice to place the wine cabinet in a gold-lined wooden container to negate whatever spirit was haunting it. He now keeps the cabinet safe inside a military-grade case, which he buried. And surprisingly enough, thousands of people are begging to take it off my hands, says Jason. But it's not ethical for me to sell it. It's not for sale. And there's still one person who refuses to accept the Dybbuk box, and that person is Jason's mother, Rhea Haxton. He keeps telling me he's going to give it for my birthday, and I keep telling him I don't want it. She said, I've got enough problems. And that's a direct quote from Maria Haxton. And that's the end of the Jason Haxton story. What do you guys think? Do you guys believe the story, or do you think it was a blatant hoax? Let me know down in the comments. Alright, that about does it for tonight's episode. Please join me in the outro. I want to thank you guys so much for joining me for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And make sure to let me know if you guys have ever seeing the movie The Possession, talking about the Jewish folklore Dybbuk box. And also let me know if you guys have ever heard of anything that we've talked about in tonight's episode, including the Dybbuk box. Or maybe you have some experience with that type of thing. I mean, me personally, I would never, you know, mess with that, but I mean, some people just let their curiosity get the best of them, I guess. But with that being said, I want to wish you guys a good night, a good week, and I will see you next time for an all-new episode of Demimonde Paranormal. I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope you learned something new. And if you didn't, well, I hope you're entertained anyway. And if you guys want, don't be shy to subscribe to Demimonde Paranormal on anchor.com or any of the podcast listening or streaming services you may be using. And as always, I'm Tori, your host from Demimonde Paranormal on Facebook as well. We are a private paranormal group where we discuss all things supernatural. Alright, with that being said, good night, sweet dreams. Be kind to one another. Stay safe, make good choices, and as always, this part is so corny, but stay spooky.